Mr. Speaker.
If not,
Mr. Speaker.
The chair will put them in rows.
Mr. Speaker.
The bill is passed.
We've created a commitment to America.
Those in favor say aye.
Iran attacked Israel and scrambled the House legislative schedule this week. Hello, welcome back to Control, a podcast where we look around the corner at the challenges and priorities facing Congress. I'm one of your hosts, Annalise Keller.
And I'm Brendan Buck, your other host. Yeah, the week has been scrambled. Uncertainty seems to be reigning as we record here on Monday. But this could potentially be, I think, a very big week in the House. And while last week was relatively dramatic, I think we will learn a lot about Speaker Johnson. We've got the potential for aid to Israel, how that potentially ties into Ukraine, the threat hanging over the Speaker, a really interesting meeting at Mar-a-Lago, at least as it relates to the politics last week. And I think we'll need to revisit what happened on the floor with FISA, which was a disaster that got, I think, turned around and in a weird way ended up being a not so bad week for Mike Johnson. But so much could happen this week, things that we've been talking about for a really long time. So we'll dig into all that. And maybe this is the time where what we expect to happen in a week actually happens, because we've been talking about things happening
pushed
every week, and then it never actually gets done.
Yeah, and they're out next week. So this week is kind of when they have to, it's a big moment. And as Brendan said, we're recording this Monday morning. The House Republicans are going to meet this evening at 5:30 to talk about what that Israel package could look like. So it feels as though there will be a lot of maybe news or more information on what they're hoping to do. They were going to be doing appliance week this week, so no longer.
Is that off the schedule?
I think that's off the schedule.
Who's going to save our stoves?
Yeah. I guess they're just going to get banned. But they have, they've put 11 bills on the suspension calendar pertaining to Iran. And they're going to do, I think six are going to be through the Rules Committee. So we'll see how all of that plays out.
Yeah, I mean, the House can make lots of statements, and I imagine a lot of these will be big bipartisan votes. But the big question, of course, is what do they do about sending money and aid to Israel? Now, they have attempted in a few different ways to send money for Israel. Annalise reminded me this morning that they did the Israel aid with IRS cuts many months ago that I think was panned as a bit of a partisan stunt. And then when the pressure came on the House to do Ukraine and Israel, Johnson tried to break off Israel a few weeks back and couldn't get a rule through. So had to do it on suspension, and that failed. So the question today is, does he try again to just send money for Israel? Can he do that? What does that look like? Can he get a rule through on that? Can something like that pass on suspension? As we've talked a lot, there are dynamics to pay attention to among House Republicans, but there's also a heck of a lot of dynamics to pay attention to as it relates to Democrats and whether they would vote in large numbers for something like that.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the easiest thing to do would just be to bring up the Senate bill.
Yeah. So, or the other option, continuing to tie those two things together. And that is the, to me, that seems like the off-ramp that he has been looking for. Obviously, a really bad situation over the weekend, and you don't want to necessarily like frame that as an opportunity, but certainly if you're looking for the change in politics you needed to get foreign national security funding off your lap, sure feels like it's here. But I guess I worry that the instinct still is, let's just cleave off the thing that unites the conference, which is generally Israel funding, and divides Democrats rather than doing the hard thing. And I'm relatively confident that anything that is just Israel is going to have trouble because, one, the process, you know, as we saw again last week, very difficult time bringing up any rules. I you know, maybe they could pass a rule bringing up just Israel aid. They probably could, but I don't know. And
well, I think you made a good point this morning when we were talking about this. You know, this is something that Johnson wants to do. It's something that he's been saying he wants to pass Israel and Ukraine foreign aid. So this, you know, it sort of feels like, you know, again, not to be opportunistic, but it sort of feels like the week and the moment to kind of where all of this is going to come to a head. And this, I don't know, I agree with you. It feels like that is not the path that he's putting himself on. Did Sunday shows talking about how he's looking at putting a package together. Now, that could be something that is, you know, kind of similar to the Senate bill, but maybe works with Schumer to get a few things that make it a little bit more palatable to Republicans. And maybe the Senate has to take it up, but it's not, you know, a total departure. Or he could go back to this idea around the Repo Act, the, you know, loans that he talked that, you know, Trump is apparently on board with.
Yeah. You know, if they're trying to just do Israel only for political purposes, you know, unite your team, divide the other. You already have that vote twice, so I don't know why you need that vote for the political purposes.
But yeah, it didn't go anywhere.
But if you think you can make law with that, that may be great. You may be advancing one priority, but you're also making it a lot harder to get your other one done. When those two things were tied together, it's much more palatable than just Ukraine aid on its own. Now, he may face a lot of pressure from his conference to say, let's divide these things. These are two very different. Israel is more urgent. Let's, you know, let's do that. It just gets harder to make that law. But if you do pull off making law with that, Ukraine is just sort of floating out there.
Well, and there's a motion to vacate.
Right. Well, I mean,
out there.
Speaking of like floating out there, this bill has been sitting out since the Senate passed it, and seemingly nothing has changed. Like, no, none of the dynamics have changed other than Democrats probably are less likely to want to support Israel aid. And now you finally have something that the politics have shifted, and there probably is more urgency, and you probably could get away with, you know, plowing ahead and saying, you know, now is the moment we have to support our allies. But as you know, like, that's not like easy still. It's still very hard. And so, you know, maybe that is the instinct that still drives him, that this is too risky for me. I imagine this is why he's been sitting on it. But I mean, there's just the weird dynamic here is that he keeps saying he wants to do this and then doesn't move it. And so at some point, like, if he doesn't get serious about Ukraine now, when will he ever? They're going out on recess next week. You have a moment where there feels like some real urgency to do something. And if you don't act this week on the broader package, and then you go home for a week and sit there, and then you're probably
talking about
right back where you were before, where maybe the urgency has left, and you're still sitting there stuck. So I totally get the instinct to want to just move Israel alone politically. But if he is serious about wanting to do Ukraine, I can't imagine that the dynamics get any better for him than they are right now. And moving quickly on something like that is a big lift. I don't want to minimize it. But I'm sure that will be a big topic of conversation at this Monday 5:30 meeting.
Yeah. Do you think Johnson could get 2/3 for the Senate package?
That's a good, really good question. Like, how do you bring it up? I don't know. When it's got Israel funding in it, it makes it really hard for a lot of Republicans to vote against it. And that's why, you know, you really don't want to separate these things and think that you can still somehow get Ukraine done. You would probably be having to look at a bipartisan rule, which some Democrats have suggested they may help on that if Johnson doesn't screw around. But I mean, let's not overlook the thing we've talked about before, where he's floated a bunch of stuff that Democrats aren't going to support. And once again, he's going to need to at least color within the lines here on what is reasonable and what is possible if he's actually making law. Like, do not think that you can shoot your shot on some like conservative wish list version of Ukraine-Israel aid and even get it through the House, let alone make law on it. And at that point, you're eating a bunch of crap from your members who didn't want you to move on this without actually making law.
And I think Marjorie Taylor Greene is still going to have the opportunity to, you know, try to get rid of you at that point. I guess I'm not convinced that she sees something like this loan. You know, I don't know. Maybe Trump says, you know, Marjorie, don't do this. You don't want to do this. If Johnson does the loan package and he's fine. But I also think there's a scenario where he moves the loan package or repo act or, you know, some sort of creative conservative package, and you know, she still decides that that's not something that she's interested in.
I am of the opinion that anything that he does on Ukraine is going to end up triggering a motion to vacate, even after Trump sort of gave some gentle pushback. He needs to at least operate under that assumption that she is going to do that. But if that's the reality, I think that's all the more reason to do something where you can actually make law instead of just screwing around and trying to get something through the House, because then you're going to get the motion to vacate and you're not going to get the law. So if you can attach the Repo Act and you can make some of it alone and maybe some other small things at the edges, like, fine. But don't start adding energy policy, which, you know, may be great policy, but it's not going to make law. And so you're going to end up failing on your broader goal, and you're still going to end up with a motion to vacate. So that probably requires engagement with Democrats, engagement with the White House, and this is a lot to execute really fast. And so if he's coming into this meeting Monday at 5:30 and saying, here's my intent to, you know, bring up a broader package, you know, this policy that he's been saying he's been working on, then that is one thing. But I think one thing we've seen with Mike Johnson is he tends not to move very fast.
Yeah. Well, we saw the three chairmen, Foreign Affairs, McCall, Turner, Armed Services, Mike Rogers, want the full supplemental to include Israel, Ukraine, and Taiwan. So I don't know. I wonder if today, if they come in, if Immer comes in and they're like, okay, we need to, you know, kind of see what kind of support we have for the Senate bill, and maybe, you know, things and dynamics have changed a little bit this week, and maybe they can get it through 2/3, and maybe they couldn't have previously. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a good point. I don't know that they've even whipped the Senate bill. They probably haven't, because they basically said that they don't want to do that. I do think at this point, you know, we've talked a lot about, like, just bring up the Senate bill. As long as he hews closely enough to it with maybe just those few changes, he probably does need to tweak the bill. To satisfy at least not Marjorie Taylor Greene, but some of the others.
Yeah, and I think Schumer would be okay with that. I think that, I mean, depending on what it is. Like,
I think they will look at it and realize that, okay, you have to do that. Yeah. And if we're making law, like, I get it. And he'll be helpful and say, this is a really bad thing and I don't like that you're doing it. And, like, you know, it's not, we shouldn't put it past them to be willing to do that kind of theater. I don't know that it, like, dramatically changes things. Important to appreciate at this point, though, we still only have Marjorie Taylor Greene, who is saying that she supports a motion to vacate. I'm not saying at all that it won't be a larger number than that, but it's very possible that it is 3, 4, 5 members. And of course, that could be enough if all Democrats vote to dump him. And we've talked at length about the unfortunate dynamics that will exist for him the rest of the Congress if Democrats need to come in and save him. I think we've said this 100 times now. Like, I think they will. And he will probably survive if this is the scenario or the context in which the motion to vacate is brought up. you don't want to be the speaker that needs the minority to help you get there. I get it. But the alternative is not being speaker. So I think you take that and kind of try to just push back on Marjorie Taylor Greene as much as you can. Maybe try to get people to vote to table the resolution instead of an actual vote on the motion to vacate. Maybe that is a little more politically sustainable for Johnson. But I thought it was a huge deal that Trump didn't. I expected Trump to go down there and kind of undercut Johnson on Ukraine at Mar-a-Lago, and he definitely didn't.
Yeah, I was surprised by that too. And we'll obviously get into this later, but after all of the fun around FISA, I wasn't entirely optimistic that he was going to throw any support behind Johnson.
Yeah, it was. Friday could not have gone better for Johnson. That was the best day of his speakership, easily. He turns around a really embarrassing failed rule vote, gets just a 2-year extension, but gets that done, and then goes down into what is always a highly volatile situation. Anytime you're standing next to Donald Trump, that was a relatively risky thing to do because who knows what that guy was going to say. I mean, I'm sure they talked about it a little bit before. But he not only kept the door open to aid for Ukraine, which he's suggested in the past he's against, and without really, pushing on her too hard, seemed to imply that he didn't support any motion to vacate.
Motion to vacate rules should be finally changed, or do you think that it's just creating chaos right now?
Well, it's unfortunate that people bring it up because right now we have much bigger problems.
Probably didn't sit well with Marjorie Taylor Greene, so who knows? Like, I don't think that you can just assume that she backs off. I think she's a live wire and is going to do whatever she wants to do and probably doesn't like that somebody else other than her is standing with Donald Trump. But between saving FISA, the pushback on Marjorie Taylor Greene, being open to Ukraine, I mean, you couldn't have asked for a better dynamic. And now you have this new urgency to act on it. I'll say again. This feels like the week. Again, tough to execute that quickly, but certainly not out of the realm of possibility if you were to sort of announce this tonight, put something out on Tuesday, some policy vote Thursday, Friday. I mean, that's totally reasonable. We may be having a motion to vacate at the end of the week, which would be fun. This feels like a week where we could go in any direction, where you could get Ukraine and Israel funding done. You could have a motion to vacate, or you could just absolutely punt on everything and we do a bunch of symbolic bills on Israel, try and fail on Israel funding again. Marjorie Taylor Greene sits quiet, and very little happens. I mean, that has been the trend, that we think things are going to happen a certain week and then they end up being punted or not doing something. But this does feel like it could be the week. And if it's not this week, I don't know when the week is.
Yeah, well, let's take a quick break. And when we get back, we're going to talk more about the challenges that Johnson's facing and the Rules Committee in particular. Control is a 7-letter word, and this podcast is a production of 7-Letter. 7-Letter is a leading strategic communications and bipartisan public affairs agency. Our work is powered by senior practitioners who develop and execute innovative communication solutions to take on complex challenges. Learn more at 7letter.com. Now, back to the program. Yeah, going back to Mar-a-Lago for just a minute, it is truly remarkable that Johnson was standing there with Trump after getting FISA passed towards the end of last week, after Trump was actively trying to derail that and succeeded in part when Gates, led a bunch of Republicans to tank the rule, which, was, again, a very poor showing for Johnson. So, I mean, really turned around over the weekend and now is set up this opportunity with Trump pushing, for in support of Johnson's speakership, which I was just as surprised as you were.
Yeah. That didn't even register with me. Yeah. I mean, he had just passed the bill that Trump was publicly trying to defeat and he's up there, happy as can be with the guy. I don't know what that says about you know, how invested Trump actually was in defeating FISA, or maybe
was just Gates just telling him to do that.
Yeah, or maybe there's a better dynamic there with Trump than we appreciate, and Johnson's able to speak to him. There's a great New York Times story by Annie Carney over the weekend about how you have to be really engaged with Trump on a legislative front because he does have the tendency to blow things up. I talked to her for it, and you know, the dynamic that we experienced when I was in the Speaker's office with him always sort of popping in at the last minute to try to screw things up was difficult to manage. But at least at that point, he had skin in the game, and he was invested in the success of the legislative agenda. And this feels like a dynamic where he clearly has much less investment in that. And so FISA, like, he's not probably been paying a lot of attention to that. He's just, oh, I'm against that, and I'm going to tweet. Or,
he's just probably hearing from people in a circle and sort of just...
And so it's even harder then for Johnson to like keep the guy on the reservation. McCarthy had the benefit of like Trump was sort of checked out on this stuff for a while. Like, and maybe there's a lot of work that went into this. Keeping him quiet on the debt limit deal was no small feat. But now that Trump is like back on the stage, he's like everybody's focused on what he's doing and saying, you know, certainly he's going to have a large voice on what they do on Ukraine and Israel funding and whether or not I don't think Trump can help you pass something, but he can certainly stop you from passing things.
Just another fun dynamic Johnson has to deal with.
Yeah. But yeah, it was another embarrassing defeat on the floor. I think it was the seventh time that a rule has failed this Congress, which is wild. That kind of stuff just doesn't happen. And now we almost don't even, like, everybody gets all worked up during the vote. Oh my God, can you believe this? But it almost feels like just sort of part of doing business in the House now that they can't even bring bills up on the floor.
Yeah, I want to talk about that a little bit. And credit to Kristen Wilson over at CNN. She put out a tweet that was just kind of going through the recent speakers and how many roll votes that they lost. Pelosi, zero. Boehner, zero. Ryan, zero. Pelosi, yeah. 2-0. And then getting into McCarthy, you see, you know, 3 and 6, 3 votes in 8 months that he lost. She said Johnson lost 4 votes in 6 months, but that, I don't know if that was before or after the FISA rule, or maybe it is closer to 7.
So you have to go back to the early aughts since a rule has gone down. And now this Congress, both under McCarthy and Johnson, it is a regular occurrence. great clip of Tom Emmer walking through the basement of the Capitol after the rule vote fails. And he's like, I'm the whip, but we don't whip rules. And reporters like, should you?
Were you surprised by the number of defections today on the rule?
We don't whip rules, so... surprised for that. I mean, it is what it is. We whip bills.
Did you start whipping rules, though?
No. Procedural rules, we're not going to do anything.
Which is a very fair question. It used to be that no one ever voted against rules, as we just laid out. That was just such a huge no-no. And people would vote against them every once in a while, but we had large enough majorities where you could...
And it was usually prearranged, like, I mean, typically, right?
There would be small protest votes, but, you know, when we had a 20-seat majority, if two guys decide to vote against the rule, it's frowned upon for sure, but it's not threatening your agenda. And we probably had some close rule votes.
But in my memory, typically, like, even if, you know, this was maybe before Freedom Caucus, but if there was someone who was going to vote against the rule, they would, you know, maybe come to leadership even and say, like, hey, I have a very specific issue with this. I'm just giving you this heads up. Like, I'm not going to be voting for this. Now, certainly not all the time. That changed with Freedom Caucus.
Well, look, we were certainly aware that there were threats to certain rules because... you know, there are instances where a rule has to do a lot of stuff. So we talk about rules as like, this is how you bring a bill up. But there are definitely times where, okay, well, we have to self-execute an amendment, or we have to bring up multiple measures. And like a lot of the criticism would be like, this rule is like, you know, asking too much or doing too many things that I don't like, and you're screwing with the process, and this is abuse of the process, and you would have people threatening rules that way. But I guess my argument is like, whether it was a surprise or not to us, it's certainly not a surprise to leadership right now that they've got a problem on rules. And I don't know that Tom Emmer is necessarily going to be able to solve that problem by
whipping.
By whipping them. You know, whether you define whipping as counting or whipping as trying to convince. But you've certainly had situations where with FISA, like the rule vote was way worse than I think a lot of people were expecting. And that's never good. Like not knowing whether you have the votes is a terrible situation. And that's probably why this keeps happening. So maybe they do need to revisit whether you can support the rule. I mean, you had Chip Roy voting against the rule as a rules committee member. And it's, you know, look.
Yeah, he said nobody cares.
And maybe that's true. Maybe in this conference, nobody cares. And we are already sort of numb.
I think he was talking more about like his constituents don't care if he votes against a rule, which
totally
they
fair.
Probably don't.
Totally fair. I mean, who even knows what that stuff is? I mean, those people around here are, you know, getting a crash course in rules committee.
Yeah, but you know, that's frustrating because, I mean, on one hand, he's right. But on the other hand, it's completely turned the House upside down and ceded all of this authority of the House and their ability to pass anything. So, you know. I don't think we need to do an education effort to the American public on rules, but certainly interesting.
But it's interesting until it like gets in the way of actually doing things, which is the situation they're going to find themselves in. Once again, like doing big things in the House is always hard. Doing big things when you have a narrow majority is even harder. In this political environment, it's super hard. Like everything is hard. And then you throw on the fact that you're primary tool for moving bills through the House is can be completely taken away from you, then it's no wonder that you can't try to outmaneuver the Senate. You can't try to, when you don't have 218 people with you, like you can't really do much of anything. And that's always been sort of a theoretical trope of the House. You know, if you have 218 votes, you can do anything. And it's just proving that when you don't have 218, you can't do much of anything. And that's bearing out itself in pretty consequential ways. The problem is, you know, to Chip Roy's point, like nobody's paying any price for it. No one is really, no one's been cast off and no one is sort of paying a political price, even within the conference. It just feels like you kind of do this stuff. Remember during, I don't remember what the bill was that they were bringing up, but all the New York guys were threatening to take down a rule over wanting salt provisions. If this is just a regular thing that everybody does, it's no wonder that this is going to end up being one of the least productive Congresses we've ever had, even just in terms of stuff getting out of the House. Like we used to always be able to at least like rail on the Senate because we've passed all of these things that are sitting over in the Senate and, you know, take up our bills. It's less and less the case because, you know, they're spending weeks doing things like Appliance Week.
Well, there's a new chairman of the Rules Committee.
God,
so maybe everything's going to change over there.
I wonder what that conversation was like. I don't know. But do you think that he was, I mean, I guess being a chairman is cool and you get an office in the Capitol, but man, like, what do you do?
Unwanted job.
What do you do when Johnson comes to you and says, Mr. Burgess, you are now the new chairman of the powerful House Rules Committee. Welcome to leadership.
Amazing.
Oh boy. I mean, I guess if you're going to be
already on the committee,
doing the late nights and dealing with McGovern and all that kind of stuff. Not a huge deal, but
I guess if they throw everyone out, there's not really a scenario where if Speaker Johnson brought in a whole new rules committee
which is still my view, throw out the whole rules committee and
start
over, and just that conveniently that helps erase your problem with people like Chip Roy. But of course that doesn't like solve your bigger problem where the rule on the floor is the bigger problem. But it still seems totally within his bounds to do that. And look, Tom Cole is as respected as they come. I mean, I don't know that he was like considered a true believer among the hardcore guys, but everybody loves him. So I don't know that Burgess is going to be expected to be any more effective as chair of that.
Yeah, committee. I think nothing changes. I think it's just status quo. Well, I mean, I think, you know, this conversation around the Rules Committee, I think it's going to be very interesting, one, to see what Johnson brings up, and then two, to see if he tries to put something you know, what kind of role he tries to bring this up under. I just think there are so many open questions right now.
Yeah, I don't know that you can bring up a rule unless it is
bipartisan.
Maybe you can pass just Ukraine aid under a rule, maybe. They weren't able to do that before. But if you're doing Ukraine with Israel under a rule, it's going to have to be a bipartisan rule, and that's not the norm. Which again, maybe sounds like stupid, like who cares? Like who cares about the process like that? But you know, it's just wired into people's mentality in the House that bringing up a bill onto the floor is the job of the majority, and if you can't do that, that's not our problem. And if you want us to bring up a rule, maybe you're gonna have to put some conditions on aid to Israel, which again, like that's not going to happen. And you're getting into a situation where like if Democrats are needing to ask for something to help you move your agenda, you're in a really, really bad place. I just want to underscore again, Israel aid for Democrats is problematic, and we can't just assume that Democrats are just going to be there on either that to help with a rule on, certainly not to help with a rule on just that. Maybe not on the bigger package if some of them have all of these demands. I mean, I just think the politics on that have shifted quite a bit. Maybe what happened over the weekend will change that a bit.
I think so. I do. I think that this is like the only week where Democrats would be willing to allow, you know, small changes around the margins if Johnson like needs to put a couple of like Republican wins onto a bigger Ukraine-Israel package. I think, I don't know that it would have happened last week, but I think Democrats would say, okay, well, yeah, you know, we'll support you on this.
It's just a big open question of whether they can avoid all of that and pass a big package under suspension, needing 2/3 of the vote. I'm skeptical that could pass, but it might. Again, there's just so much uncertainty this week. And then, could it pass with a majority? Yes, but then you're going to need Democrats to pass a rule. And will they be willing to do that? And what are they going to ask for things? It's just really complicated this week, which the more I talk, the more I'm like, I don't know that Johnson is going to be able to pull that off.
No, it feels like he's going to try to separate out Israel, don't you think?
That seems where he's headed, but who knows what he says. And then I just hate it if you leave for recess next week without actually moving the ball on the bigger like lawmaking effort on Ukraine.
Or maybe it is really just small measures for Ukraine that he tacks onto Israel that really doesn't make anybody happy.
Yeah, again, I going down the road of not making anybody happy and being too cute by half and, you know, not making law, not being able to pass it, but still doing something on Ukraine that pisses off Marjorie Taylor Greene just doesn't seem like a very wise play. Maybe he'll just run away from it all. Like he's done that a lot. Maybe he'll just, you know, do a bunch of either partisan or symbolic measures on the floor this week, and then they move on, and we come back in 2 weeks, and we're right back where we were before. And he keeps trying to find what he thinks is the perfect moment to
I don't think it's going to get any more perfect.
I don't think it's going to get any more perfect. I don't know. I don't know what he's waiting for. I don't. I honestly don't. I don't know what he thinks. And it would be one thing if he was really just looking for an exit ramp to not do something and kind of run away and hide from it. But he keeps talking about wanting to do it, and he keeps telling people he's committed to it, and he keeps talking about, you know, introducing some policy.
Well, I think if he doesn't do it this week, then that's all been talk.
I would have to, agree with that conclusion. So we'll see what he does. But man, this just sure feels like the week to do it. I don't want to dismiss how hard that will be and the real threat he'll face for Marjorie Taylor Greene. But I said this before, if that's the context that brings the motion to vacate, I think that would be soundly defeated. I think Democrats will defeat it. I think very few Republicans will vote with her. Trump's clearly got his back, like as of 3 days ago. So
yeah,
like
Biden,
take
McConnell,
that, take that just win. And you know, you're basically have the hardest thing that you have, the rest of this Congress is now off your lap. You want to answer any questions about this? Again, I don't want to minimize the motion to vacate. Very real threat. Very likely will happen if he does that. But I just think that she's probably going to do that at some point anyway. And this is probably the best context for you to be
facing. And don't legislate in fear of that.
You can't. I mean, it's easy for me to say that. I mean, Kevin McCarthy is now former speaker because he, you know, tried not to be afraid of them. But he's in a very different situation right now than McCarthy was, at least as it relates to Democrats, at least as it relates to the person bringing the motion to vacate, Trump. Like, the dynamics are in his favor. He had a really good Friday. We don't have a lot of good days. Like, take advantage of that momentum. Build on it. And so look, it feels like they're actually building towards something big on the floor, because they've totally scrambled their plans for the week.
Yeah. Remember, House Republicans were supposed to send impeachment charges to the Senate, and they said that they were going to wait until this week. So that's scheduled, I think, for today or Tuesday. But of course, depending on how things go in the House, I could also see that kind of getting caught in the scramble of the House schedule.
Yeah, that'd be really interesting if they ended up not sending it because they need to create space for the Senate to actually receive something meaningful from the House.
And that would almost put it in May, right?
Mayorkas?
I guess there's one, yeah.
I guess. It's
the 29th through the May 3rd.
It's very pressing business.
what Full if they, trial.
What if they just forget? So maybe Mayorkas slides another week because they're going to move something meaningful through the House, that the Senate needs to deal with, so it doesn't get caught up in a trial that, distracts them from that.
Or maybe the Senate takes it up and dispenses of it.
Maybe they get rid of, maybe they impeach the DHS secretary. Who knows?
Anything can happen.
Anything can happen. And that's what this, Congress has proven. So,
but not tax.
Tax bill still languishes. Happy tax day to everybody. Yeah, I guess any hope that tax day would be a action-forcing event.
Republicans blocked business tax cuts in the Senate.
That's not encouraging for tax reform next year when we have to do that. But all right, well, let's leave it there. As we said, incredible amount of uncertainty this week. This entire Congress has been marked by uncertainty, but it certainly feels like this could go a lot of different directions. Very high stakes, lots of emotion, lots of characters who are hard to nail down. So we will be watching very closely. Unfortunately, Congress is out next week. So unless something crazy happens, which it may be, we won't have a pod next week, but who knows? Maybe the gentlelady from Georgia will trigger another emergency podcast, and we'll be back with you then if so. But otherwise, we'll be off next week, just like the House.
Thanks for listening. Control is a production of 7-Letter, a leading strategic communications firm in Washington, D.C. and Boston, with deep experience in bipartisan public affairs, public relations, crisis management, digital strategy, and corporate engagement.
Special thanks to our producer, Benji Englander. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. Please join us next week for another episode, and don't forget to rate and review us. Thank you for listening.